Hi, everyone. Thank you for sticking around for the last session. This work is collaboration with my colleagues at the Systems Group of ETH Zurich and Newcastle University. When working with long-running streaming jobs, it is a matter of time before any initial configuration actually becomes out of tune. So any streaming job will inevitably become over or under provisioned at some time in the future. That is because workloads are largely dynamic and unpredictable. So if the input rate increases, for example, the system might not be able to keep up anymore and will start shedding load. If the input rate decreases, we might end up with idle resources. Because streaming jobs are long-running, they might also accumulate a lot of state over the course of the runtime, so they might run for days or even months, and that might cause the performance to degrade over time, in which case we might also violate some throughput SLO. In all of these cases, we would actually like to be able to vary the resources dynamically to avoid unnecessary costs. So in this work, we target specifically data parallel, data flow jobs, streaming jobs, which are expressed as a graph of computations, where the operators are the nodes in the graph, and the edges denote data channels. So a streaming job ingests one or more input streams and outputs one or more output streams. So when we want to deploy such a job, we would commonly monitor the input rates, then configure the parallelism of the different operators, and then deploy the job and test the performance, and repeat those steps until we finally meet our throughput SLO. We would ideally, of course, like to remove the human from this loop and automate this process. So we define the scaling problem as following. Given a logical data flow with sources S and input rates lambda, we want to identify the minimum parallelism P per operator so that the physical data flow can keep up with all the input rates of all the sources. So we want to figure out how many instances, parallel instances, to provision per operator in the data flow so that we can keep up with the input rate. A typical scaling control loop has three components. So the first component is collecting metrics from the running job periodically. And this is used to detect symptoms, so to detect whether a configuration is currently out of tune. The second component is a policy that uses these collected metrics to decide whether a new configuration, whether scaling is actually required. And the third component is the action, which decides how much we need to scale. So there exists a lot of work in this area because this problem is very important and quite fundamental. So there have been many systems that have looked at this problem, and we also looked at them. So we try to categorize the existing approaches in terms of these three components that take part in a scaling control loop. So with regard to metrics, we find that the majority of existing approaches use externally observed coarse-grained metrics like CPU utilization, how many input tuples arrive at the system and how many tuples are produced by the system, and signals externally observed like back pressure. When it comes to policies, the majority of existing systems use some kind of heuristic and threshold-based policy of the form, if CPU utilization exceeds 80%, for example, then we need to scale. And when it comes to scaling actions, what existing systems do is usually some pessimistic approach. So they make small changes, usually to one operator at a time, and then they gradually try to reach to the final configuration. So we identify several limitations in existing approaches. When it comes to metrics, externally observed metrics are very problematic because they are noisy and because they are very sensitive to performance interference. You can think about how hard it is to attribute, for example, CPU utilization to a specific operator in a data flow in a multi-tenant environment. When it comes to policies, these are also problematic. Threshold-based policies are also problematic because they are very sensitive to the noise metrics they receive, and these thresholds have to be manually tuned. And having these noisy metrics and threshold-based policies, the best you can do when scaling is actually speculate how much to scale its operator. So you cannot predict in an accurate way what is the parallelism for all the operators in the data flow. These limitations lead to negative effects when actually applying the scaling. They lead to oscillations, they lead to temporary over and under provisioning, and often slow convergence. We can actually see these problems, or some of these problems, manifest in a state-of-the-art scaling controller. In this case, Dalion. It's a controller of the Heron streaming system. So in this graph, we see the scaling actions of Dalion when controlling a very simple data flow. It's a word count with just two operators. So in this case, we actually see that Dalion requires six scaling decisions to reach the final target rate. So to overcome all of these problems, we propose DS2. DS2 is a model that replaces externally observed metrics with true rates, which we retrieve through instrumentation. We replace threshold-based policies with an actual data flow dependency model. And instead of using non-predictive speculative actions when scaling, we can actually predict how much to scale all the operators at once. This way, we can avoid all these negative effects of oscillations. We can use the true rates that we get through instrumentation as bounds so that we can avoid over and under provisioning. And this leads to much faster convergence. I want to give you an intuition of the main idea behind DS2. And I will use a very simple example. So consider this data flow of just one source and two operators. And consider that the source is currently back pressured. So it's producing 10 records per second, while it could produce 40. So if we look at this system as a black box, like existing approaches do, and we measure it from the outside, and we get the observed view, what kind of information can we get? We can see that the source is back pressured and it cannot produce as much as it could. And we can see that operator one processes 10 records per second and operator two processes 100 records per second. However, we cannot really tell with certainty which operator is really causing the back pressure. Where is the bottleneck? And even if we could guess which operator is causing the back pressure, we cannot know if we remove this bottleneck and scale this operator, if this bottleneck will move somewhere else in the data flow. So we don't know what will happen if we scale operator O1 to keep up with the 40 records per second, how much we need to scale O2. Do we also need to scale it four times? We don't know. Instead, what DS2 does is to add instrumentation into the system and look inside each of the operators. So this way, we can get more accurate information about what is happening. We can see how much time each operator spends doing useful work, how much data is sent from one operator to the other, and how long an operator takes to process the data it receives, and how long it's waiting for input or output. This way, we can say with certainty that in this case, the bottleneck is indeed operator one. But more importantly, we can compute the true ideal rate of operator two, in which case we know that if we scale operator one by a factor of four, we don't need to scale operator two by a factor of four, but instead a factor of two would be enough. So the DS2 model defines the following three notions. We define the useful time as a metric we retrieve from instrumentation, as the time spent by an operator instance in deserialization, processing, and serialization activities. Using this useful time, we can now compute how much we can now compute the true ideal processing and output rate of an operator, as the number of records an operator instance can process or produce per unit of useful time. Using these two metrics, DS2 can now traverse the data flow from the source to the sinks and compute for each operator the ratio of the aggregated output rate of the upstream operator over the average true processing rate of the current operator. That means that for each operator, we need to figure out how many instances it needs to keep up with all the input rate, the output rate of its upstream operators. I'll show you how this leads to convergence. So DS2 repeatedly acts as if the scaling was linear, as if the system was actually ideal. In this case, the ideal rate when scaling up is an upper bound, and when scaling down is a lower bound. So it guarantees no overshoot in the first case, no undershoot in the second case. And that means that if we predict a linear scaling and the actual scaling is indeed linear, then convergence takes a single step. However, in practice, rates are common sublinear. In this case, DS2 will have an error in the prediction, but then it repeatedly makes linear decisions and minimizes this error until it reaches, until it finds the actual curve of the scaling. In all of our experiments, even with complex data flows and complex queries, DS2 took up to 3 steps to converge to the final configuration. We have integrated DS2 with 3 systems, Apache Flink, Heron, and Timely Data Flow, and DS2 operates in an online and reactive setting. I will show you some evaluation results, but there are many more in the paper. So as the first example, we compare how DS2 behaves in this first example I used as a motivation, the word count example of Dalion. And in this case, we see the same data flow. It's a word count. And the dashed lines are decisions made by Dalion, and the continuous lines are decisions made by DS2. Note that the target rate here is quite low, so this is 16,700 records per second only. The first thing we observe here is that DS2 converges in a single step, and that it finds the final parallelism, the ideal parallelism for both operators in a single decision. And it takes around 60 seconds for this decision to be made, which is actually the time Heron needs to send DS2 the metrics DS2 needs. On the other hand, as we already saw in the first figure, Dalion needs 6 steps to converge. But in this figure, we can see why. We can see the reason. We can see that Dalion cannot scale both operators at the same time, so it speculates by scaling one operator, redeploying, see what is the effect on the other operator, scaling the second operator, and so on, until it reaches the final configuration. This process takes around 2,000 seconds for Dalion. There is another important thing here, which is that the two systems arrive in different configurations. And that is because Dalion, in fact, significantly over-provisions this job. For the second experiment, we wanted to see what happens if we integrate DS2 with a stream processor that has a more efficient reconfiguration mechanism, in this case, Apache Flink. So this is again a word count example, but with much higher target rate of 2 million records per second. And in this experiment, we have 2 phases. In the first phase, we start with an under-provisioned configuration, and we want to reach the target rate. And then around in halfway, the target rate drops to half, to 1 million records per second, in which case DS2 will have to reconfigure again. So these drops we see there are actually Apache Flink taking a consistent checkpoint of the state and restarting the job. and that takes around 30 seconds in this case. So here we see that DS2 converges in two steps when scaling up, and it reconfigures both operators at the same time, and the same when scaling down. And when scaling down, DS2 can actually react in just 3 seconds, as long as it receives metrics from Flink. As a final evaluation result, I would like to show you some results on more complex queries than data flows, word count. So we chose 6 queries from the Nextmark streaming benchmark. These are queries that contain different operators that are stateless, like filter and map. There are 2 input operators, like incremental join. And there are different kinds of windows as well, like tumbling window, sliding window, session window. What we see here is the first column is the initial parallelism where we start from. And we have both scale-up scenarios, where the arrows are scaling actions, and scale-down scenarios, where we start from over-provisioned configuration and we need to scale down. What we can conclude from these results is, first, that in a lot of cases, for many queries and many initial configurations, DS2 can make accurate predictive decisions and in a single step, while it needs at most 3 steps to converge in all cases. So to sum up, I argued that using observed metrics and threshold-based policies can lead to negative effects when scaling, such as oscillations, misconfigurations, and slow convergence. I proposed our solution, which is DS2, which uses instrumentation instead to gather more accurate metrics and estimate the parallelism for all operators in the data flow in a single step. And finally, I demonstrated how DS2 can indeed make fast and accurate scaling decisions, even for complex data flows. Our code is available on GitHub. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Any questions?
This is Lo from UIUC. First of all, nice work. And second of all, one thing I'm curious about is that you mentioned that you guys deal with scale down. While you have like over-provision operator, you try to take a resource away from it. But based on what you just said about the useful time and the speed operation, the way you calculate the speed, how can you exactly tell when some operators over-provision? Because if you have some operator with like much more resource, then what you observe would just be the operator will be processed as fast as the operator that is provisioned in the as much as resource it needs. So how does that actually happen? It's something I'm curious about.
Right. This happens exactly because we have added instrumentation to the operators. So we don't measure the processing rate of the operator from the outside, but we can actually see how long this operator spends waiting for input or for output and how long it spends processing, right, tuples. So if an operator is over-provisioned and it doesn't have enough data to process, it will have waiting time. Right, so we can see that without with the instrumentation we have added.
So I think you're making an assumption, if I understand correctly, that when you're instrumenting and you want to find the true rates, the operator behaves in a more or less stable fashion, that one request will take the same amount of processing as the next request, as opposed to having a large variance in that, right? And so, but what would happen if there was like a larger variance?
Right. So we receive the metrics based on a monitoring interval that you can define. And we average the rates over this interval. So indeed, if you have large variance, maybe the metrics are not, the average is not a good metric for that. So we make the assumption, first of all, that the operators are data parallel, and more or less the workload has the same characteristics. So if you have very different workloads, then this might not work as well.
And how do you pick the size of the interval?
So the size of the interval, that depends on many things. It depends for sure on the system you're controlling. So for example, for these three systems, we use different intervals based on how fast they can process data and how fast they can send us enough metrics so we can have accurate estimations. So for example, for timely data flow that is super fast, we needed around 5 seconds. Interval. For Flink, around 10 seconds was enough. For Heron, we needed around a minute to get. And it also depends on the type of processing you're doing, because if you have a window, for example, you need an interval that is larger than the window to get accurate metrics.
Any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.